The Institute on Religious Life presents these lectures on Catholic doctrine by Father John A. Hardin of the Society of Jesus to give impetus to the new evangelization called for by Pope John Paul II. This series on the Sacrament of Matrimony, Part 8, was given during the fall semester 1993 at Domino's Farms, Ann Arbor, Michigan.
I suppose we, for the newcomers, briefly review what we have covered and then pick up and finish this one subject on which I believe the future, even survival, of the Catholic Church in America depends. As we've said more than once, over the centuries of the Church's history, the principal reason why there have been breaks in Catholic unity, the principal reason is that people did not want to accept the Church's teaching on the indissolubility of valid sacramental consummated marriage. Three words. Valid, sacramental, consummated marriage is not dissolvable by any human authority, including the Bishop of Rome. Given that fact, that's the main reason for the loss of millions in what we call Eastern Christianity. They are called Orthodox because, unlike those who in the early church denied Christ's divinity, they remain faithful in believing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God who became the Son of Mary. Yet, from the 7th to the 13th century, the Pope kept warning the bishops in the East, "Your people cannot be divorced and remarry." They were giving annulments, the bishops, for centuries. Finally, by the 13th century, the break was complete. In the 16th century, the Protestants, all the by now thousands of volumes on the so-called Protestant Reformation. You can spare yourself the trouble in reading those books. The main single reason was that the followers of Martin Luther claimed that a baptized person who marries can then divorce and remarry validly. Those countries, six whole nations that believe that, became Protestant. And this is the, capital T, capital H, capital E, this is the crisis of the church in our country. In other words, there are certainly valid grounds for what we call declaration of nullity. But as we saw, the church, especially in a country like ours, has had to defend the indissolubility of marriage. Our focus, which we began in our last class, we continue now, is to see that canon law from canons 1095 to 1107 give the grounds on the basis of which there can be either an invalid marriage in the first place, although valid, not sacramental, although valid and sacramental, not consummated. In other words, those three qualities of an indissoluble marital union are part of our faith. And the canons that we've just identified, 1095 to 1107, give us the norms by which a marriage can be found to be lacking, either in validity or in sacramentality or in consummation. Let's just briefly go over 1095, incapable of contracting marriage because of, say, a lack of sufficient use of reason. Can two children before the age of reason, can they validly marry? No. Or they suffer from a lack of discretion of judgment regarding the essential rights and duties in marriage. Are there Americans today who don't really know what is essential to have a valid marriage? There sure are. Like what? That marriage is a lifelong commitment. Like what? And husband and wife ought to be faithful to one another until death. Again, unable to assume essential matrimonial obligations due to psychic conditions. And then 1096, the parties must know that marriage is lifelong and open to having children. Does a couple who do not want children, can they validly marry if they don't want children? Well, but post factum they find out they cannot have children. Is it still true that their marriage is not valid if they did not want children when they married? Yes. Again, just to go through the canons, 1097. Error regarding the person does not invalidate unless directly and principally intended. In other words, clearly, no two people who marry can know all that's knowable about each other. Can there be an error about certain features of their marrying partner? Can there be an error? Indeed, indeed. Then, invalid if fraud or deception. And the fraud or deception would have to be on something which the one who wants to marry has, say, been deceived. For example, suppose a young man tells the girl that he's dating, "I want to marry a virgin. Are you a virgin?" She swears that she is, but she's not. They marry. Is that marriage valid? No. If, in other words, if that's a condition for entering a valid marriage, it's not valid. 1098, regarding marriage, Yet unity. And just two people. At the couple I was counseling at the university. He's a Muslim. She's a Catholic. In my first meeting, I asked her, "What are you?" She said, "I'm Catholic." I asked him, "I'm a Muslim." Then when I asked him, "Are you a believing Muslim?" "Oh, of course I'm a believing Muslim. But Father, don't get us Muslims wrong. We don't put away our wives. We keep them all." I looked at the girl. Well, she did stop smiling, I must say that. Or in disability. And this is a very grave error. In our country, when almost wherever you turn, people are getting divorced and remarrying. And the more publicity is being given, and it is massive publicity, to people, even nominal Catholics, divorcing and remarrying. The question now is to tell priests to teach them in giving pastoral care to their people. Be sure, be really, really sure that the couple that you are counseling before marriage believe that marriage is for life. Really believe it. Because all around them, the nation, major cities, there may be exceptions, I don't know of one major city whose divorces in a given year do not approximately equal the number of marriages. And the record, my memory tells me, was Chattanooga, Tennessee, recently. Chattanooga, Tennessee had 5 divorces for each marriage in that year. Many states have no need even of a formality, a telephone call. And that we can, as we know, credit the founders of Protestantism for having taken marriage out of the authority of the church and put it in the hands of the state. In other words, the couple must believe when they marry that I am marrying for life. If either, one is enough. If either or neither believes that, then, if neither believes it, even one does not believe that marriage is for life. There is no marriage. And the behavior of some people after marriage is they're totally out of their minds. At least they're logical. In our books, our novels, our movie scenarios, our television programs, infidelity has become a norm in our society. Notice any one of these errors regarding marital unity, indissolubility, or sacramental character does not invalidate by itself. Mere ignorance does not invalidate. As it affects the will, meaning what? If, say, a girl says, if I knew that my marriage, if I was told that my marriage was for life, I would not have married, at least not this man. You follow the logic. Where the error affects the will, so that a couple marry, but in error on something which, and only they really can tell, if they had known the truth, they would not have married. and of course, invalid out of force or fear. I teach in Western Michigan. I think I told you people this. Man called me up from a distant city in Michigan. He said, "I hear you help people." Well, he had an annulment. What are you talking about? So he came over and been dating a girl, and she was pregnant. He did not really want to marry the girl, but facts of life. So then her father, I think I told you this, came to see the young man and told the man to sit down, put out a gun, and sure as I'm standing here, he held the gun resting on the table. "Will you marry my daughter?" Said, "A shotgun marriage, that's a revolver marriage." Well, what could I do? So he married the girl. By the end of the month, she had relations with another man. So after a year, well, he got a divorce because she was just so unfaithful. And for 7 years, that was in the 60s, he was struggling. What can you do? He didn't remarry, got a divorce. So then, I must have told you this. I called up the pastor. A pastor witnessed the wedding, that first one, with the girl who was pregnant. And I called up the pastor. I said, "I'm Father Hardin, teaching Western Michigan. There's a man here who was married in your parish. The girl was about 5 months already pregnant." He tells me, "You asked them no questions. You witnessed the marriage. They were divorced, now separated for 7 years." So the pastor says, "What do you want me to do about it?" "We got to bail me out." I say, "Father, just a moment. Just a moment. You should never have witnessed that marriage in the first place. Who are you to tell me what to do, Father?" Of course, you might have hung up. I could have tacked him down anyhow. Finally, "Oh, look, Father, it's going to be embarrassing, very humiliating." He shows how maybe in younger days in the priesthood how stupid you were. "But you put in a petition for declaration of nullity. It was both force and fear. And in record time." Well, the marriage was declared null and void. But now the crisis. You have your pages, I hope. You have your pages? I call this. Sister has some copies of the canon law on marriage. The crisis, of course, is fundamentally a crisis of faith. I know of no single truth of our Catholic faith that has cost the Catholic Church more members over the centuries than this one. Christ's teaching on the indissolubility of marriage is, what a safe statement, a mystery of our faith. But it is our faith, we believe, that God gives those who were baptized in his name, who contracted a valid marriage, and have had marital intercourse after marriage, he gives them the grace to remain faithful until death. After the Vatican Council, when so many responsibilities that had been in the hands of the Bishop of Rome were transferred to the authority of the local bishops. Among the authorities which the bishops obtained from the Pope was to declare a previously celebrated marriage as null and void, otherwise known as a declaration of nullity. The language annulment is not good. In fact, it's wrong, as though somehow marriages are annulled. We come back to that tripartite, three-part condition for an absolutely indissolvable marriage. Both must be validly baptized before marriage. Both must enter into a valid contract. And they must have engaged at least once in natural intercourse after marriage. One of my former teachers and the Jesuit priest who got me into theology, Father Edwin Healy. Some of you remember the Healy shops in Detroit, women's dress shops. At any rate, the Healys were multimillionaires, sold their business, of course. Father Edwin Healy was a Jesuit, my teacher. And he was the one who told me, when he left the States to teach in Rome, he became a member of the Rota, or Rotier, which is that branch of the Vatican that deals with marriage cases. He said they had 30,000 cases on the books for the United States alone when he took his job. And as you know, it could take years before the Holy See would make a decision. There's just too many cases to handle. In other words, the declaration of nullity cases. As a result, Pope Paul VI gave bishops the authority to declare that a marriage either had not been valid, or sacramental, or consummated, or all three. But any one would be enough to then say that that couple were not living in a marital union, which was not dissolvable. Am I clear? The bishops got the authority. And they have it. What the result has been a flood of problems. By the way, I made these 50 sets of the article from the Homiletic and Pastoral Review on too many invalid annulments for you. I would like to see the rest of those pages. I hope it was not the quarter stands in the way. I know of nothing I will have given you during the two semesters that will be more useful than this article. Let me just read and then I'll go back to my notes. In the late of the papal addresses of 1987 and 88. It is now clear that United States jurisprudential principles on psychological incapacity are defective. The focus of this article by a priest from the Peoria Diocese is the granting of annulments on the basis of defective psychology. Follow the logic. Are the people who married or not totally sound psychologically? And then he proves his case. There was a massive crisis. One of my lawyer students at the university in New York, where I taught for 14 years, told me in the diocese of Brooklyn, New York, it is easier to get an annulment for Catholics than it is to get a civil divorce. And happens to be, or happened, past tense, to be the head of a marriage tribunal without identifying the exact diocese, but in the state of Michigan. When I asked him, all these annulments you're getting, what's your principle? Very simple. Everyone who applies for annulment, we believe, has a right to get their marriage annulled. That's the beginning of the end of the Catholic Church in America. The only diocese in our country that will survive, no others will make it. The only Catholic dioceses that will survive are those in which the bishops and the priests still believe that valid, sacramental, consummated marriage, no authority on earth can dissolve. Because the main reason for almost 1,900 extinct dioceses in the Catholic Church, 1,900, is because in those dioceses, and in many cases, the dioceses of a whole country, like Denmark, like England, like Norway, like Sweden, all the bishops of those countries caved in. And the state church, for example, like in Sweden or Norway, the law of the land. There's no such thing, does not exist, as an indissoluble marriage by Swedish, Norwegian, Danish, English, Welsh, Scot law, and large parts of Germany, and of course, what other country, as a nation, does not believe, and the civil laws defend the principle, does not believe that marriage is indissoluble? Our own United States. Now the crisis. The basic issues regarding marriage in the modern world are twofold. First, the widespread ignorance about the unity, indissolubility, and fruitfulness of marriage. Many people just don't know. Many Americans don't even know there is such a thing as an indissoluble marriage. And second, basic issue for the crisis is the state of confusion and instability of the people entering marriage. First, ignorance, and then confusion and instability. Consequently, the key factor in granting, quotes, annulments is, first, number one, and then number two, And what is the first factor? It is the ignorance, the state of mind of so many people. And this is where, please God, the Catechism, which the Pope, as we know, has issued, and is still to be published in English. And this is the main reason for the long delay in getting the English text published. Because those who put together the English translation stood in judgment on the Pope's text. And how many programs in religion, religious education? How many youngsters from their early grades learn that it is God's will that a marriage is intended by Christ to be undissolvable until death?
They quote McBrien and all the other
wackos.
I
want
to
see
it.
Oh. It's
in there.
There it is.
Second page
of that one. In any case, the simple fact is that millions of American Catholics don't know their faith. And not know this is devastating. Because all the while that people are ignorant about the church's teaching, they are being fed all kinds of ideas to the contrary. So it's not merely, you might say, ignorance in not knowing. It is that the untruth is being taught. And even sadly, in so many nominally Catholic circles. In the state of mind, we are the most, I mean this, I think the most confused major nation in the world. How many Americans think for themselves? I've watched people, priests, sitting for hours, not moving a muscle, mesmerized by television. Or walking around with earphones. One of the privileges of flying these days is that not too many people want to talk because they're listening to whatever they're listening to. So I can do my work, say my prayers, and I greet them, I say hello. Or usually, I usually wait till the end because you never know. And I apologize for being such a poor communicator. I just had work to do. Then for 5 minutes, we engage in a very lively conversation as the plane levels off. People are being brainwashed all day long because of the state of will to make a valid marital contract for lifelong commitment. You must sincerely believe that marriage is for life. Then you must also have the will to live that lifetime commitment. What complicates the issue is the liberty And this is what I want to especially stress. The liberty that so many marriage tribunals are taking in relying on psychology or psychiatry to decide that a person entering marriage was not psychologically capable of making a lifetime commitment. I think I've told you what my favorite definition of a psychotic is. I borrow this from Freud. According to Freud, a psychotic is a person who believes in life after death. So, very simple. Thanks to Sigmund Freud, my definition of a psychotic is one who does not believe in life after death. One of the greatest deceptions perpetrated on the human race must have, what shall I say, elevated Freud to being the father of psychiatry, which, and I have to say it, and I mean it, with my graduate degree behind me in psychology, I believe psychiatry in the modern world is a pseudoscience. And that is why our present Holy Father has more than once publicly and then published his teaching to the Roman Rota, which, as we said before, is that division of the Vatican that handles marriage cases. And these would be marriage cases subsequent to them being handled by the tribunals in the different countries, warning them, begging them, pleading with them, threatening them, in the name of God, don't forget that Christ made valid, sacramental, consummated marriage indissolvable. This is a statement from the Rota. I'm quoting. The continually daily increasing number of marriage cases, especially in some regions of the world, which the ground is defect of discretion of judgment or incapacity to assume and fulfill the essential obligations of marriage due to causes of a psychic nature, constitutes a grave problem for the Catholic Church regarding the sanctity and stability of the matrimonial bond. Although this phenomenon is to be placed most especially in modern times, amen, ours is the most psychotic age in human history. Although this phenomenon is replaced most especially in modern times, both in a more profound investigation of anthropology and a more perfect knowledge of the doctrine about the nature of marriage, there is no one who does not see that cases of nullity of marriage because of the above-mentioned grounds are to be handled with the greatest of caution, as the jurisprudence of our forum tells us. The Supreme Pontiff has recalled this to the mind of all who offer their services in tribunals in the administration of justice, with a purpose and plan that any shadow of arbitrariness in the handling of these cases should promptly vanish. In other words, as the then Monsignor in charge of the American marriage cases in Rome, now a bishop, told me, And I think I should repeat it, and I'm sure I've said this before. Our biggest problem is in Rome is there are so many bishops that no longer believe that sacramental marriage is indissolvable. That's our biggest problem. Looking into the future, I have three principal needs that should be met in our society for the future. First, the need for Catholics entering marriage to understand their faith. Oh, they better know their faith. Otherwise, all that we are now experiencing in our country follows. Secondly, the need for Catholics to use the supernatural means of obtaining grace. In other words, we will never be able to, I don't say resolve, but even cope with a deluge of cases pleading for dissolution of the marital bond unless we ourselves, those who are married, those who are in charge of the tribunals, the priests giving instruction, that we are all using the means that we need to have the grace. And as you know now, there are books, some pretty thick books, and often priced very low, on how to get an annulment. I can tell you, among the reasons that motivated me to agree to come here to Ann Arbor was I thought, whatever I can do to help those whom I will teach to understand whatever else I can teach them, is to understand that the indissolubility of Christian sacramental marriage is an article of the faith, that I would die this moment if somebody put a gun to my chest and told me, either you deny that Christ instituted marriage as indissolvable by any human authority, either deny that or I'll shoot you. Open my casket. Here, shoot. But we've got to be convinced. When I said before, people have questioned if the balance behind the statement of the greatest joy on earth is suffering for the one you love, you and his grace. And in marriage, dear God, how husband and wife must understand, how they must understand that if they really, really love each other, they are not only willing or resigned to suffer, they expect to suffer from the one whom they love. That's the nature of love, my friends.